Good afternoon, Muskegon.
Good afternoon, Muskegon.
I am Chauncey Williams.
And I am Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now, your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your financial success with 103.7 The Beat.
Okay, Chauncey, this is it.
Yeah, this is it, baby.
So we've been waiting for, we've been through all of the formalities of watching the other teams want to be where these two teams are. And this is the trilogy.
That's right.
Okay.
Who you riding with, Tony?
Man, I'm going with the Cavs. I like underdogs.
Underdogs. I'm going with the Cavs. I don't think they're underdogs. I look at LeBron being a cat. Like, he from my hometown. I got a lot of love for him. And then if the game is fast, how they going to stop them boys?
Very true. But I always look at what the experts say in the Vegas. The guys that lay down the line, the betting line. And they are actually heavy underdogs.
Wow.
Yeah. Throughout the series, they're saying right now the money is on a sweep. By Golden State.
I'm thinking
that's
LeBron,
where the money is.
I'm thinking LeBron could sweep because I'm looking at the 89 Pistons, how they did the Lakers.
Okay, when they didn't see it coming.
They didn't see it coming. And Tyronn Lue played with Jordan, okay. Played with Kobe, and played for Phil. So he got the minds to pick.
Okay.
So
and they are without their coach, and they're playing the coach on the other team now is LeBron's old coach.
They got swept.
Okay.
In 07. So you know what a broom is like. So get that broom again. But on another tangent, we got a phone interview today. We got Simone Kaysine online right now, and she's
Well, before we get into that, let's get her pick so we don't have to back up.
Oh, okay.
I want to see how Simone feel about this playoff thing.
Simone, you here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. What's your pick between the Golden State and the Cleveland Cavaliers?
I'm with you guys. I'm with the Cavs.
Okay. All right.
I'm kind of like you, Chauncey. I think that LeBron reminds me of a hometown boy. So, you know, I definitely, don't get me wrong, I like Steph Curry. I think he's really cute, but I would go with the Cavaliers right now.
All right.
Okay. We off to a good start,
yeah,
Simone.
She's good. I'm sitting here looking at her.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sitting here looking at her bio right here. It's Capital Coalition, Uncover Your Emotional, Mental, Spiritual, and Cultural Relationship with Money. And I was like, wow, this looks major. And it's major issues that me and my co-host deal with all the time when we see our clients.
Absolutely.
Whether it's going from insurance and investments or credit or student loan debt, it's always masked. And we had an article that we had read last week, and I was like, wow, I was thinking about you. So Mom said she'll be perfect for this interview because I've always been trying to get you on air. And it talked about the broken dreams and financial illusions, the secret depression of black men. And I was just reading your bio before I had to actually talk to you. And I was like, wow, she did some great things, going from owning your own spa, graduating from Western Michigan. But then a lot of people I've noticed that are passionate about the financial field, Tony, they find themselves in critical and traumatic situations financially, and then they don't want to be there again. They acquire the knowledge. And that's what this young lady did.
That's it.
Simone acquired the knowledge, and now she has her own company, and she's doing major things, and I've seen some interviews she's done and some blogs and forums, and she's doing her thing. And I was like, we got to get her on. I've been telling you the last couple weeks because I'm always looking to collaborate and build and expand on what we're trying to build. So I was like, she's from her hometown. I went to elementary, high school, and middle school with her, and she's always had that flavor, and now she's putting it on another level.
See, for me, being broke was a significant emotional event, okay? And this been years and years ago, and that was like, I promised myself I will never be broke again. And I went about the business of getting the knowledge to understand why people go broke to make sure I never go broke again.
That's right.
Significant emotional event.
I was reading something today, and it talked about, probably in this article that we have, it said, do you have a fear of a budget or a fear of poverty?
Poverty.
Poverty for me, too.
I have a budget.
Yeah. So just looking at Simone's bio, I was looking at, and it says she holds licenses, security licenses for Series 6, Series 63, Series 65, and life and health insurance also. And she's certified for preparing taxes for people. So she got
fantastic.
Some major skills, man. This is an African-American sister.
Okay.
From a small town like this, and that's in Chicago doing big things, the suburb area. So I'm going to let her just expand on more and more of what she does. I was just going off your bio, Simone, but just share with us what you've been doing and how you've been building.
Okay. right. Well, one, I want to tell you first, thank you so much for having me. Definitely an honor. Just like Chauncey said, I grew up in Muskegon Heights. Later moved to Chicago where I studied fashion design and eventually opened up my own makeup studio and spa, which was really good. You know, we were featured in the Sun Times and the Tribune and a host of different publications and doing really, really good with PR. But during the downturn of the economy in 2008, we needed to switch our business model from services to products, because people weren't coming in to get as many services, but they were willing to take the product home. And that took capital. And I was not able to obtain a business model. Didn't understand anything about credit, didn't know about it. Really kind of barely understood what a CD was. So I closed my business, and I really decided that I was not going to be in that situation again. And I really wanted to learn everything that I possibly could about this world of financing. So I went back to school to study business financing. Long story short, I was working at a makeup studio, and I kind of just walked across the street to a bank and got a job. They offered me an investment program that was supposed to be done in a year. I did it in 9 months. And did that, got promoted really quickly with that company, and then decided to take my clients on their own to be able to do investments. But while working in the bank, which is very, very important, is one thing that I learned is that every single person, every culture, every religion had a different relationship with money. And that reflected how they dealt with money, how they budgeted, how they spend, how they save, and even how they invested. And so I spent 3 years actually studying different religions and cultures to find out what made those religions and cultures tick and why they were successful or not successful with money. And that's how we got Capital Mortgage.
I love that. I was looking at your bio and I was reading that. And I have a seminary degree, and I always think about that when you have like people that have biblical principles on money, or if that's based on their culture, especially people that are from countries that come from third world countries, and they don't look at acquiring things. They always look at taking care of their family and advancing their legacies. And it's strong for them to do that. But then a lot of times you get into American culture where people are not connected to either a faith-based or a culture. They find themselves emotionally attached to money. And I remember having a conversation with you previously about impulsivity in it, and the emotions that's tied to it. So I was like, this is just a perfect interview to have you on today, and just because having that research is, for one, is great.
Oh yeah,
right. Thank you.
Yeah, we want to acquire stuff.
Well, the emotional part is really, really big when we talk about Sydney, right? So when we put in perspective of how we get into debt, in a lot of cases they are emotionally charged events, right?
Yes.
So something happened, and maybe you max out a credit card, or something happened and you decided not to pay it off, or, you know, you got something in collections, it could be a medical bill and all. And so, so many things are emotional. And so what we find is that so many times, so many of us will go to these financial seminars. I know prior to this, I had gone to hundreds, you know. I had even gone to see Donald Trump a few times before he became 45. But I spent a lot of time attending different seminars, and I would only be right back in my money situation 30 days later, and I couldn't figure it out. You know, they've given me all these tools, they told me how to do it. What they didn't do is they didn't deal with my actual relationship with money, whether it was emotional, mental, cultural, it could be spiritual, a host of different things. So what we do is at Capital Coalition is that we get individuals to uncover that relationship with money. And by the time you finish the program, most of our clients end up raising their credit score by 50 to 100 points, and that stays well over a year. We've only been in business for a year, but it remains. We also teach them how to create multiple streams of income along with this. And so with creating these multiple streams of income, they can remove the anxiety away from not having enough money and being able to build a budget that they're comfortable with. Along with those multiple streams of income, we're also going to teach you how you can leverage those tax benefits. And then last but not least, every one of my clients walk away with a savings and investing plan. So they're able to save a certain amount every month, and then at that point, we're able to help them diversify their funds. So we are building wealth. We are building wealth. That's the most important thing.
Wow, that's just think about the typical person that we deal with, Tony.
Okay.
We've had previous shows where he'll have a client. They come in, they want to buy a car, a sports car or something, a Dodge Hellcat, and they say they want this. They'll buy the car first.
Right.
Then they'll come in for the insurance.
Yes.
And right.
If you know anything about insurance in Michigan, it's a whole different animal than it is anywhere else in the world. And unfortunately, these people wind up taking the cars back because the insurance costs more than the vehicle. And it's like, you know, we're trying to educate the public that you're doing it backwards. Okay, if you don't own a vehicle, you need to find out how much it's going to cost you to own a vehicle in Michigan before you go purchase one, if you're speaking about a budget. So that
relationship leads to our mental relationship. We talk about that. And so mental relationships, when you think about it, we really think about an abusive relationship. And most times when you say somebody's mentally abusive or whatever, it's the same thing with your relationship with money. So you are maybe in an abusive relationship, and it makes you feel like you have low self-esteem, right? You can't be good enough. You're going to constantly try to obtain something that really you might not be ready for. And so that mentality right there enslaves you and puts you in an enslavement. And so undoing that mentality is what we have to do to figure out how do we get the mentality of we're good enough outside of the materialistic thing. That the materialistic things that we have and the money that we have is only a tool to create our desires. That's not what we're planning our self-worth on. And so you have to deal with that mentality and raise that self-esteem and that self-awareness. And that will make you have great intentions with your money. And the key to any successful relationship, whether it's with your mother, God, your kids, is having great intentions. So you have to have that with your money also.
Yeah, I'm feeling that. It was I'm looking at the article and I'm thinking about it was a Bow Wow challenge people have on social media. I heard about that.
Yeah.
Where he took a picture, and it's in the article, so I'm going to expand on it. I'm going to let you guys have your take on it and have a quote in it also. But he took a picture of like a Boeing jet or something, a personal jet with a Range Rover and stuff outside of there. But he was flying coach, and he said, oh, I got to get on my own personal plane. But then the article expands that I have. It says, credit, celebrities, and trinkets have given many of us the illusion that we are doing economically well than we actually are. And we have been bamboozled by Facebook likes, hoodwinked by comments, and led astray by Twitters and retweeters. Social media has a tendency to tell a lot of people a lie instead of telling them the truth. Or I have seen that people have looked for validation in purchasing a car or a new home. It's like, which one should I get?
But can you really afford it? That's the question.
Okay. And then, you know, somebody on the light. Go ahead.
And let me say that. Yes. Let me say this one thing. I teach this very, very important. I get single mothers that come in. And I am not a fan of telling some single mother that she can't take her kids out to dinner once a week because they need that culture.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
right.
I agree.
And so, you know, we
it's
all
a relationship.
Go out to dinner, you know, we take pictures of the food and all that other stuff. And so the children and her, they both need that event culturally. But what we have to do is we have to create and find ways on how we can afford it. So understand, we are in a society where when my mother grew up, my mother, she's going to kill me, but, you know, she's a little bit older than me. Hi, Mom.
Miss Kayson, I don't play.
She grew up in a time where success was built on, you know, your work, who you were, who your parents were, your family values, you know, what kind of things that you could achieve. My grandfather would always say, step from my shoulders and not from my feet. That was a very big thing. Now we're in a society where it doesn't matter if you're successful or not. There's no idea of what success looks like. There's only the idea of what it looks like to us. Right? So as long as other people think that you're doing well, you're doing well. So we're in this society, and that pushes us so many times to make very, very bad money decisions. Because it's not about creating a foundation. It's about pretty much building a house without, you know, without any skeleton. And so that's my take on the whole social media ordeal. I just think that, you know, you have to have more and become more than what you present on social media, or at least be that. You know what I mean? At least be that.
Yeah, be that
person that you present.
That's right. The facade. Don't let the facade fool you.
Right, right. And don't put so much emphasis on the facade.
That's right.
Some
absolutely.
People are more in love with the facade than they are with themselves.
Okay. They spend a lot of time, effort,
you know,
and money.
Happy? Yeah, are you happy living a life?
Right.
You can keep you can live the truth everywhere you go when you enter places, and people know that your story is real. You don't have to. Materialism is just that.
It is. You know,
yeah,
and it's that.
It is.
And
when, I think that's a great takeaway. Materialism is just that. It comes and it goes. And yep. The funny thing about it is, you know, we talk about the iPhone and everything else. Every 6 months, it's a new one.
Yes. That's right. You don't need
every new one.
I was going to say, if not
right.
sooner.
Do you need to upgrade?
Right. Every 3 months. Right. You need an upgrade. So you're constantly going to be on that hamster wheel. And that's the same thing that happens in any abusive relationship. You stay on a hamster wheel, constantly trying to change. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Constantly trying to chase something that's not really obtainable.
Yeah, but quote I've read, I love, and I always tell Tony, I like Creflo Dollar, and he talks about managing debt or living debt-free.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, when you manage debt, you have the facade, the tweeters. I say, I'm not even that good with social media. I try to post the things I do in the community and try to keep on building capacity to show people I can help them
right.
by being transparent. But he talked about, do you want to manage debt or do you want to be debt-free? And, you know, the scripture that talks mm-hmm. about serving two masters.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
I had translated that, and I wrote a stat about it. I said, I would rather money serve me than money be my master.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah,
absolutely.
I think I shared it.
I would rather have money to serve me, because, and that's when I was thinking about you. I was like, the relationship that I have with money is, people cry over it, laugh over it, excited.
Commit suicide, man.
I mean, it's so many, it's
yeah.
all the emotions
yeah.
tied to it. But if you tie in the materialism with that, your identity
yeah.
as a person is gone, because you find yourself just working.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
For no relationship outside of that. And like being and it, like here's some numbers. I got some stats. It says data suggests in this article, the majority of African Americans are not in a great place financially. A prime example of this is a finding in the color of wealth in Boston. I used to live in Boston. I lived in Boston 2 years when I got my master's, and I saw the disparity. I used to hang out in Metapan. Metapan's where all the Haitians and Jamaicans hang out at. And it said the report found that the median net of the white households in Boston is $247,500
mm-hmm.
compared
yeah.
to the black household of $8. I saw that disparity.
$8?
$8.
You know, that's
I
way
saw it,
below
but
poverty.
I have to look at, but
go
you
ahead.
You have to look at this. You have to understand. In Boston, you have what is considered old money.
Real old.
That's right.
Real
yes.
old.
Very old money. And so when you have old money, when we look at this, we have to look at the fact that you're having. I mean, Boston is a place where they built that area off of the, you know, we can go back to
yeah, let's go back
slavery.
400 years.
Slavery.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So when you look at that, you're talking about immigrants. When you talk about the Haitians, you're talking
right.
about immigrants who are coming with absolutely nothing.
That's right. Come
in
on.
In comparison to individuals who have been teed up or have been passed on generational wealth.
Yeah.
So that wealth that they're seeing is generational. That's been passed on since, you know, the Mayflower, when you really put it in perspective. So when we talk about it, you have to think about what happens to a disenfranchised culture. What happens to a disenfranchised culture? So you have we can look at the Jews who were disenfranchised just like us.
That's right.
That's, you know, we stole the word ghetto from the Jews.
That's
but
right.
They were
That's
able
right.
to leverage what they were able to leverage and create and become the Jewish banker, which is the pawn shop owner or merchant.
Make their dollar
what
recycle.
We did was, right. And so what we did was we are still not in a place of leveraging our being disadvantaged. The dollar doesn't circulate. I think, what is it? The dollar circulates in the black community 60 cents?
That's right.
The whole dollar don't even make it around. 60 cents. So that's going to be an instance. We don't talk about insurance. We have to get to the point where we understand that a GoFundMe account or a
come
bucket
on.
At the chicken coop is not an insurance. Insurance or a funeral plan.
And insurance right? is a wealth tool.
So right.
It is a wealth tool. You can get insurance for a young child and start them off, and by the time they turn 18, that insurance policy has cash value that they can pay education for. The other thing is that I just recently talked about it is that African-American women are now the most outlearned, most educated subgroup in the United States. But you know what that also means?
That's right.
We have the highest amount of loan debt.
That's right. Right? Mm-hmm.
So we're the highest educated, but we're also the highest in debt. And so when you think about these things, we really have to come together with our as a family unit and so much more to be able to tackle these issues. And so when you see that disparity, it's more than just the fact that they're white. It's their culture.
Are you right?
They're culturally rich.
And I have the
And those individuals are culturally poor. And so that's what it is.
And it keeps it going where it's generational. And I got two stats.
It's a cycle.
It's yep. generational over and over again. It's a cycle. It's a continuous cycle.
And I got two.
And so we have to break it.
Yep, I got two quotes from the article. It says, the Federal Housing Administration policy, when they got the GI Bill, they gave the housing projects mm-hmm. to the minorities, and then they were able to build suburbs.
Right.
In the large areas exactly. like New York, Boston. Then the Jim Crow laws, employment discrimination. Then denial of access mm-hmm. to capital, loans, you know, small
tape.
Loans to start business.
And red tape.
And red tape.
And red tape zoning. For a long time.
Yes.
And then even on top of that, when we look at it, red tape was an awful thing. We have to agree with that, you know, to be able to tell somebody that they can't do. But what red tape did do for us is it forced us to build our community. And so when you have that, when you look at places like New York and you look at places like Chicago that are very, very segregated, those areas were forced to, at one point in the 50s and 60s, were black Mecca.
Yes, they
yes,
were.
They were.
You got Bronzeville. Yeah. You got Harlem of you got the Harlem Renaissance.
Harlem Renaissance. I just want to say that.
You got Greenville of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Black Wall Street.
You got the Black Wall Street. You got Bronzeville, which was the black Mecca in Chicago. But once the red tape was removed and we started to move to the suburbs, what we did was we forgot about our area. So we left the weaker. It's just like if you have a dog and you make the two run, you leave the weaker there, it keeps getting smaller. The breed will keep getting smaller and smaller. And so I live in the suburbs, but I encourage all African Americans to, even though that they live in the suburbs, to still put at least 2% of their income into some type of non-for-profit charity.
That's
or
right.
some type of community development in their own neighborhood.
We or try to spend a way to spend your dollars. Like when you, like you when I get my hair cut, I'm buying food,
yep.
probably get my oil changed. Just see a exactly. guy out. Just you got to figure out what's the cycle. All right, I'm going
to
get this bottle of water from here.
To.
I'm buying it here.
And
you have to be able to put it back in our community. But another stat, like you had mentioned, says the black woman with a bachelor's degree is a negative 11,000. And the medium
yep.
wealth of a single black woman okay. without a bachelor's degree is zero, according to research.
Yep.
The debt.
And
yeah.
It's all student debt.
So it says it underscores the sad reality of getting a college degree may actually be a hindrance in some cases to a person's wealth position because of the frequent need to go into large amounts of debt in order to attain a higher education. And for our sisters, it's happening, but in the same time, and me and you talked about this earlier because I seen you had post something with the brother holding a sister up on his shoulder with the African mm-hmm. with the African
That's
continent on their backs. And she had posted this question. She said, could a man accept a woman? Correct me if I get it wrong. Could a man mm-hmm. accept a woman that makes more money than him? And I told her, I said, my wife's smarter than me. I wouldn't be doing half of the things I'm doing for one for my wife.
I would applaud just it.
I can't wait till she just
stand up and give your woman a standing ovation.
I'm ready to kneel to the queen.
I know that's right.
She got it in her because that's acceptance. So from my side, though.
No, it is. So to put that in perspective, we're currently doing a series called Black Love and Money, which is very, very near and dear to my heart. So pretty much what it talks about is, I think part of us healing this nucleus is us coming together and understanding how we can have healthy relationships emotionally, mentally, and financially. And so pretty much when you see the black woman, as we're talking, that she's out, in most cases, the mate that she picks, she's going to out-learn him, and she's going to probably out-earn him. So the question was really this: men, can you emotionally support this woman, even though the roles of tradition may have changed? Mm-hmm. But more importantly, sisters, can you support this man and understand that he may have, or he probably has, there's no man, he's a brother, so he has strong suits in other ways. Mm-hmm. So can you encourage him and not demean him and find how you guys can work together as a team while maybe the financial roles have been shifted? Now, we got to understand, there are some political agendas on why black women are the higher place, mm-hmm. the higher earned.
Okay.
And so I'm not going to get into that. I leave that to Minister Farrakhan.
Yes. I've read the material on it. I'm going to say the glass ceiling. That's all I'm going to say.
Right, the glass ceiling. So we won't get into that because we want to keep this lighthearted. But what I will say is I encourage sisters to make sure that you find, or if you are in a situation or with a mate, that maybe you are the stronger breadwinner, and making sure that there are other ways that you're being able to encourage and keep wealth going on between you guys, right?
Because amen.
To do a household, it takes more than just bringing in the money.
Yes, it does.
Right?
Yes, it does. So, it's a teamwork.
So making sure that there is, and there was a picture. The picture was of a black man holding a black woman on her shoulders. But what you had to notice was she was balancing. And I think that's the key to our success. You know what I mean? I think that's the key to our success as a whole.
You're right. It's the key. Go ahead,
yeah,
John.
And you know, the thing that disturbs me the most about this topic is that for whatever reason, some of our black women do not aspire to get that individual that really understands
that
her.
That motivator.
That gets her. That's going to be there to support her. Okay?
I see a disparity in relationships all the time where you'll have a woman that has everything in order and she'll choose someone that doesn't praise her in the way she's supposed to be praised. And it's none of our business, but in the same capacity, you can see the offspring that they have hurt.
Yes.
And the relationship falters later on.
It's a disconnect.
Because, like, I can look at it like always looked at it as somebody, if somebody's earning something, the financial part, somebody has to be the spiritual father, the mother of the house.
Okay.
You know, somebody has to take care of the home, make it smell good, clean. That's my job. I'm the best cleaner and cooker at home.
I do it all the time.
I'm the best. I love that. You know, I gotta have that. But she's not better than me at that. But it's certain things when it comes to getting paperwork and things in order, I have to follow her. Or like when it comes to like setting up a business meeting, yeah, she's out cold at that. But that's like a reversal of roles. But I accept it because it goes with that's the rib, that's the half.
That's it, man.
But then it's it goes back to like you said, you study religions, you study cultures.
Right.
So if you're not immersed in your culture, you'll miss your purpose, and then you'll mismanage your money and your
personal
legacy.
Relationships. Absolutely,
you'll mess it all up.
You'll mess it up.
It's a quote.
Right.
Go ahead.
The key to it is understanding that there has to be a balance, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And I think so many times, and this goes back to the social media and what we think images are. And I think in the article it talked about, you know, the traditional relationship. You know, we're living in a time where we have our brothers, black men, they are returning back from incarceration. They are returning from, you know, maybe lack of education. You know, maybe, you know, did a trade. We've had, you know, tons of individuals, black men, who have been separated or laid off from what was at one time a great job and now it isn't. And when we think about how fast our lives are moving at this point, you have to understand that there's going to have to be some tenderness and some encouragement for us to make it out of this, right?
Yes,
it's
right.
It's going to take a little bit more than just putting anybody in a certain box. I don't want my mate to put me in a box and say, oh, okay, well, you just have to cook and clean. But you know what I mean?
No,
that ain't really my
struggle.
No, say we struggling when we eat. We struggling.
Right. You know, I mean, I can cook. I'm eating in the kitchen, but I have somebody come in and do the baseboard. So what I'm saying to you is that we can't, in 2000, 2017, we've already seen that that other stuff doesn't work, right? So let's do some things that do work. And us thinking outside of the box and becoming a true team, not demeaning each other for whatever reason. You know, you mad at her because she go and get weave. Or, you know, all of these things are so petty in the whole grand scheme of things of what we're trying to do. If we focus on building this black love and money and stop focusing on rhetoric, we can be a much stronger culture, and it creates a strong couple.
That's right.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, I'm looking at the part that they talk about the divorce rates and the man, how open, disrespectful a woman could be towards a man mm-hmm. when it fulfills financial needs or the lack of stability can furthermore cause a man to want to be single and not engage.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's when that's what she does. It goes back into the substance abuse. Because if I'm emotionally detached, I gotta attach myself to something else.
To something, and it won't be in the household.
Yep.
Guarantee you that.
And it might be illegal. Right. It might be illegal. Our lifestyle, it might be illegal. Drugs, it might be illegal. Alcohol. Mm-hmm. So I find myself spiraling, but masking it,
mm-hmm.
and thinking it's okay because how I function, the peer group I might have. Function in that same circle. I might function around a whole bunch of guys that don't have great relationships that I can X or model or lean on when I'm dealing with mm-hmm. something. So it's deep. Simone, you got it. You right
yes,
on
it
point.
Is.
I told you.
Yes,
because we deal with people all the time.
It's a crazy thing when you talk about divorce. I think I recently did a couple of posts on financial intimacy, right? And so you can Google it. That is a big term, financial intimacy. Really simply put, it means being totally naked financially with your mate. Now, this is not something that you do with somebody that you just went on a few dates with. You know what I mean?
They don't know about the bank account.
You need to be in a committed relationship for at least a year and getting to the point. But you want to get to the point where you can be financially naked with that person. And so when practicing that, what happens is, you can then become very transparent about your money dreams and your money doubts. So I'm going to say it to you again. You can be very transparent with your mate about your money dreams and your money doubts. And I think the lack of a conversation about financial intimacy limits a lot of wealth, right?
Ooh-hoo.
I had a client, and I think the statistic was 44% of couples, black, white, whatever, have no idea how much their mate makes.
Mm.
And they live in the same house together.
That's huge.
That's crazy.
That's huge.
So if you and I are in a car together and we're trying to get to the same place, you got a map, I got a GPS, but ain't neither one of us knowing where we going.
Or sharing that information.
I don't know how to function like that. I couldn't function like that.
Right. No.
Because like when I have, you talking about the life that we live, we talking about contracts.
Right.
Like I got to get nonprofit contracts. I got clients I got to look at. I got to tell my wife, go run to the bank, go get this. I'm sending this. Like, what do you think we should be paid here? I can't imagine.
Not knowing. No.
That's just like driving a car in neutral and reverse.
Right. But that's the thing that we're not having. And as a culture, African-American couples are not having these conversations, which is limiting us to get somewhere. You know, you have to have these strong conversations on your dream. We have to be in a position where we dare our mate to dream
mm-hmm.
outside of what's best. You know what I mean? You have to dare challenge your mate to dream, to think bigger than tomorrow. What are we going to do next year? And so many times in our African-American relationships, as a culture, we're only thinking about today. Is it? In January, we have all of those, what they going to do with their tax money.
The grasshoppers.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's as far as they can think is going to, you know, get whatever short term. But we have to dare ourselves as a couple and as a culture to be able to think past tomorrow, past next year, past the next 5 years for us to build, really be able to build wealth and really be able to have a sustainable future with one another.
Pooling resources.
Yeah, pooling
that
resources.
That is a tough.
Pooling resources. I like that.
That is
pooling resources.
It's a scary phenomenon for people. Okay, for us to put all our money together in this bucket, and this bucket belongs to us.
Us.
Because in the back of their mind, Simone, you know what they're thinking. One day, I'm gonna probably grab my hat, my coat, and leave.
and leave.
And I want to be able to take mine with me.
And that's the whole thing. Okay. We're going to really wrap it up. I'm going to let you get information. But I was talking to another one of my mentors today. And he mentioned that he was collecting some bills from some clients, some rental properties. And when you think about rental properties, most of the time people just in a relationship, they just dating each other.
Right.
And he said the client owed a certain amount, right? And said the client gave them 80% of the bill and said, go get the rest from the girl. I was like, what you mean? Like, is this like a half and half thing in this household?
No, 80-20.
There's no such thing as half. Well, it's one bank account for the bills.
What'd you say, right. Simone?
He did do
80. Yeah. Okay. But then he said, go get the money from the other person.
You got to give him a little something.
Like they're a roommate.
Right. No.
Right.
So I want you to leave all your information and everything for our audience can hear it and how they can reach out to you, because I see you a necessity piece and for the work that me and Tony do. It's like people need to have that filter with you so they can come and get their credit and their debt together, and then they can walk in a situation and they can keep it. You helping them keep it. After I fix them up, you helping them keep it where they can do some investments in our city and own some properties and be with Tony. That's the whole thing. But that's how we're figuring out how to pool our resources together. I see your gift, and I enjoy talking to you today.
Absolutely.
And it's been a blessing.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much.
Got to have you back.
Yep.
Got to promise us you'll come back.
Wonderful. Oh, you know I will.
Yep. So leave your information for the audience today.
Yeah, I sure will. So definitely go to our website. It's www.capitalcoalition, which is CapitalCoalition.org. You can go to the Capital Coalition page. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, everything. It's going to be Capital Coalition. And then you can actually follow me, Simone Cason, Simone with a C, CimoneCasson. I am the cash counselor. If you just search cash counselor, I should pull up. And you can go on there. You find a host of different resources. We have toolkits on all the best apps that you can use to get your wallet together. We have a really cool PDF that's free where you can actually calculate your net worth. Your net worth is very important. You got to know how much you're worth so you can know how much you're going to be worth. So very important to have that. And check us out on Twitter. You can check out the webinars, the blogs, and you can always email me at SimoneCasson@capitalcoalition.info.
All right, I want to thank you again. I'm Chauncey Williams.
And I'm Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now? Your guide to credit, debt, and planning for financial success with 103.7 The Beat.